Coming up, as Muslims prepare to begin Ramadan fasting, Kim Lawton looks at one of the fastest growing segments of Islam in America, Latino converts. Also, I talk with John Unger of West Virginia, a state senator, and he says the country's first pastor simultaneously of churches of three different denominations. And Buddhists promoting world peace with floating lanterns in New York City's Central Park.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. This week, a wide spectrum of faith groups applauded the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in favor of a young Muslim woman who had sued the Abercrombie and Fitch clothing chain, claiming it violated her religious rights. In 2008, Samantha Eloff was denied a job at one of the company's stores because her headscarf clashed with what the chain called its look policy, or dress code. The Supreme Court sent the case back to an appeals court that had previously ruled in favor of Abercrombie. Organizations as diverse as the Anti-Defamation League and the Council on American Islamic Relations said the decision was a victory for the rights of employees and religious minorities. In Texas and Oklahoma, people of faith were among those delivering aid and shelter to flood victims after weeks of record-setting rain. More than 30 deaths have been reported, and last week, President Obama signed a disaster declaration for Texas. While waters have begun to recede, relief groups, including Texas Baptist Disaster Recovery, are predicting a slow return to normal. More than 200 angry protesters gathered outside a Phoenix mosque this past week, hurling insults at Islam and the Prophet Muhammad. The organizers said it was a response to the attack last month on an anti-Islam event in Texas. While protesters called Islam a, quote, religion of murderers, counter-demonstrations were also held urging love and mutual respect. Inside the mosque, an interfaith group including Jews, Christians, and Muslims held a rally they called Love is Stronger Than Hate. A new report this week shows a huge increase in the overall number of Roman Catholics. The Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate says that from 1980 to 2012, the world's Catholic population grew by 57%, from 780 million to 1.2 billion. The main reason? Big increases in Africa and South Asia with their high birth rates. In other news, Pope Francis's visit to Bosnia-Herzegovina this weekend is generating excitement among religious groups there. His Saturday visit was planned to strengthen interfaith dialogue in a country that is still largely divided by ethnicity and religion after a brutal war. 40% of the country is Muslim, 31% is Orthodox, and 15% Catholic. Thousands of Nigerians are experiencing a grave shortage of food after fleeing Boko Haram militants, according to the United Nations World Food Program. Boko Haram attacks in northeast Nigeria have forced hundreds of thousands from their homes, many of them into neighboring countries, including Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. The UN said child malnutrition is especially severe, and rations may have to be reduced if the current funding shortfall continues. The world's nearly 1.6 billion Muslims are preparing for their holy month of Ramadan, which is expected to begin around June 18th with the sighting of the new moon. Muslims who are able are expected to fast from sunup to sundown. Here in the U.S., there's great cultural diversity in the Muslim community. Kim Lawton looks at one of the fastest-growing trends, Latinos Converting to Islam.
At the Islamic Center of Greater Miami, Wilfredo Amar Ruiz and his fellow Muslims are breaking their daily Ramadan fast with water, dates, mangoes, and other fruit. Ruiz was born in Puerto Rico and raised a Catholic, but he says in 2002, after the birth of his twins, he began searching for a new spiritual path. The following year, he converted to Islam.
What attracted me the most was the simplicity of its theology. Islam is very simple. God is the creator, that's it.
Today, Ruiz is an attorney with the Council on American-Islamic Relations in Miami, and he's part of one of the fastest-growing segments of Islam in the U.S., Latino Muslims. More and more Hispanics are embracing Islam, in part, Ruiz says, because they find a cultural familiarity that stretches back centuries to the Moors in Spain.
Latinos soon reconnect with a hidden past. They say, oh, Islam is not really that foreign to us. Islam is us, is part of us. 4,000 words from Spanish come from Arabic. Camisa, pantalón, tomate, ensalada.
Scholars estimate there could be as many as 250,000 Latino Muslims in the U.S. According to one major survey, in the years between 2000 and 2011, the percentage of those attending American mosques who were Hispanic jumped from 6% to 12%. And experts say the numbers are much higher today.
After going to Catholic school for 12 years, my faith needed a little bit more depth in it. And I was able to find it in Islam.
Most Latino converts come out of Christianity, especially Catholicism.
The Trinity was very confusing to me. I didn't understand how God was a man or how man could become a God.
I just felt that the minute I put my head down to the ground, I felt like I was really talking to God.
Ruiz says many Latinos like that in Islam, there are no intermediaries with God, such as priests.
You don't need of another human being really to fully practice Islam. Even if you're alone in an island, your religion will be complete if you're Muslim.
Hispanic Muslim converts can face a host of challenges, not least of which is the reactions from family and friends. Ruiz's mother didn't speak to him for months.
She was hurt, probably. Why? Because she was the one that moved us to be in a Catholic school, be raised as Catholic. She herself was such a devout Catholic that probably she felt like hurt. Look, I did everything for my son to be a Catholic, good Catholic boy, and now he turns to be a Muslim.
Ruiz's wife, Edamar Capella, grew up in a Puerto Rican Presbyterian family. Her family has been more accepting.
I joke with my mom and I tell her that you raised me as a Muslim, you just didn't know it. Because a lot of the values, most of them, I learn at home. And for them, it was like my pathway. That's her pathway. Let her follow it.
Some Latinos have difficulty adapting to Islamic standards, such as no pork products or alcohol.
In the Latino culture is a party without alcohol. What do you do in a... I have people asking me, what do you do in a party if there's no alcohol?
Capella has tried to make family recipes following Islamic rules.
A lot of our recipes I had to work around and find a way of keep the taste, keep the flavors, but still I wanted them to taste Puerto Rican food, like Caribbean food, but without the pork. And it was a challenge, and I think I was pretty successful.
A more serious challenge for Latino converts can be countering misperceptions about Muslims.
I believe the challenge of adding another element of discrimination, like if we don't have enough, right?
Ruiz says it can be a struggle trying to differentiate themselves from images of Islamic extremists often portrayed in the media.
You become Muslim and you're a radical. You don't like our government or you're anti-American because Muslim believe that you're means that you're necessarily anti-American. It is hard. It is hard for us and present a big challenge, a big challenge.
There also can be challenges from within the Muslim community.
Even though most of the Muslims do see the Latinos very welcoming, when it comes to Latinos now taking leadership position in those communities, they are facing more challenges, right? Because they say, how can you be a leader or be an imam? Your mother tongue is not Arabic. How much Arabic do you know? Or how much you know of the Muslim culture?
Mainstream Muslim groups have been trying to provide more support for Latino converts. AMANA, the American Muslim Association of North America, focuses on outreach and distributes Qurans and Islamic literature. Director Sofian Zakut says they can't keep up with Latino demands for Spanish translations.
I have a guy from Ecuador. I gave him Quran and he was very happy. I've been looking for it 2 years. Another guy, Cuban, I gave him Quran, he started to dance in the street, free Quran, because they hear about the Quran, but they never seen it. And it's not easy to find it, but we find it, we have it.
On the wall of AMANA's Miami office, Zakut keeps a sampling of conversion certificates with Latino names.
Like Rodriguez, like Mercedes, Rosa. I want to put all the certificate, a copy of all certificates. We need all the rooms and all the walls to cover it because we really have a lot.
At recent national conventions, the Islamic Circle of North America has been holding special sessions in Spanish for converts.
Allah nos dice en el Quran.
Many of them don't speak English, so it's very important for them to go to these conventions and acquire the knowledge, just as any other Muslim.
Nahela Morales coordinates Hispanic outreach for ICNA's Why Islam project. She attends the North Hudson Islamic Center in New Jersey, where about 30% of the congregation is Latino. During the World Cup games, she led a team to Brazil, where they passed out literature and talked to people about their faith. ICNA says more than 50% of the Latino converts they see are women. Many choose to wear a head covering or hijab.
So the reason I wear the scarf is because I expect to be respected by the opposite gender. I don't want to be catcalled, and I don't want to be judged by my appearance. In fact, I want to be judged by my intellect.
It reminds you of who you are and what values you have. And I don't see that as oppression. I see that as a favor to me, to be able to do the right thing all the time.
Roraima Aisha Kanar emigrated from Cuba when she was 5 years old and converted to Islam when she was 23.
My father, when we came from Cuba, taught me to love this country for opening their arms to us. And at this time, as a Muslim, I'm still cherishing it because I am free to be a Muslim.
Ruiz, who served as a Navy chaplain, says Latino Muslims bring much to the American Muslim community.
You can keep your own cultural expressions and be equally American.
Latinos, he says, can also teach the largely immigrant Muslim community about political organizing and standing up for their rights. He says because they face so many questions, Latino converts tend to be better educated about Islam than many from predominantly Islamic societies.
I need to learn, not to a level to satisfy only my curiosity, but my family's curiosity as well, right? And I better be ready to answer their questions. Because otherwise I might not look good saying, hey, have you embraced a religion and you don't know this about your religion?
At the end of the day, Ruiz believes any challenges Latino Muslims face diminish with the joy, he says, they find in Islam.
Islam, what brings to most of the people is peace. People feel at peace first with themselves, of who they are and their way they have chosen, and at peace knowing what is the purpose of life.
And that's something they want to spread throughout the Hispanic world. I'm Kim Lawton in Miami.
In Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, there are three small churches of three different denominations that feared a few years ago that they would have to shut down because their congregations had become so small. Today, all three are thriving, partly because of the leadership of a vigorous man who's both a politician and the pastor, simultaneously, of all three churches. His name is John Unger.
Because it's not necessarily what you say, but it's what you do.
John Unger is a 45-year-old West Virginia native who has pastored St. John Lutheran Church in Harpers Ferry for 4.5 years. He says when he started, the congregation consisted of just 6 people and a dog. Today, about 50 people worship here on the average Sunday. They love their pastor so much that they seem not to mind sharing him with 2 other churches, the United Methodists and the Episcopalians.
May our Lord be with you as you go through your troubles and your family.
Such interaction used to be unthinkable, but 13 years ago, the National Evangelical Lutherans and Episcopalians agreed to honor and accept each other's clergy. John had been filling in at the Episcopal Church informally while the number of parishioners grew from 5 to about 30. Then last August, still the pastor of St. John Lutheran, Unger was formally installed as the priest of St. John's Episcopal Church by the area's Episcopal bishop.
Pastor Father John Unger, welcome.
Thank you. So do I kneel now?
Unger thinks he's the first person in the country to be pastor simultaneously of churches of 3 different denominations.
I'll tell you that I can't do it, not alone. I recognize my limitations, but I believe that that with God all things are possible.
It also can't hurt that John relates so warmly to his people.
I love you, then.
I love you, too.
Yeah.
I've been praying for you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll see you later.
All right.
See you next Sunday.
Okay.
All right.
See ya.
When the 8 a.m. Episcopal service is over, John walks a block to his Lutheran church to lead the 9:30 service there. John talks his sermons, which are slightly different at each church. Kara Unger, John's wife, is a school teacher who also teaches at the Sunday school here. Unger thinks the interaction between his 3 churches can be a model for what could be done around the country, individual congregations working together, but still keeping each one's distinctive traditions. He also thinks the example here would be great for national politics.
If these 3 denominations can sit down and have Bible study and dialogue and communion and still go back to their respective positions and doctrines and traditions, surely we ought to be able to do the same thing in our political realm. You know, you're not going to be any less a Republican or a Democrat if you 2 start talking, you know?
When Unger talks politics, he's on familiar ground. He's not only the pastor of 3 churches, he's also a state senator. Indeed, a Democrat who has been the majority leader of the West Virginia Senate. I asked him about crossing the line between church and state.
I'm very careful to make sure that I don't bring politics into the church. However, I'll tell you this, that I do bring my faith into my politics. It is who I am. And I do not discredit or try to in any way tear down other people's point of view. I believe my ministry is loving God with all my heart, mind, soul, and strength. And my public service is loving my neighbor as myself. Being a pastor has made me a better legislator because I get to go into people's homes at their most vulnerable time and understand the human condition, seeing where people live. And as an elected official, I never got that opportunity. But as a pastor, they invite me in.
When a chemical leak poisoned the city of Charleston's water, Unger led the campaign for a law to protect the whole state's water supply. It passed unanimously. Unger thinks one reason was his pastoral approach to lobbyists and his fellow lawmakers.
Whatever their faith is, we may disagree on the policy, but I do know that I respect you as a child of God, and therefore I need to respect you as such. It allows for better discourse. Therefore, allows for better policy.
Unger thinks the Congress in Washington needs a big dose of the same mutual respect.
You know, the biggest problem with Congress is that there's no dialogue and no respect with one another. I mean, they're shouting at each other, they're calling each other names, and they're tearing each other down. Therefore, nothing's getting done.
Unger has had a busy life. After graduating from West Virginia University, he was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford. He spent a year with Mother Teresa in India. He was a missionary in Hong Kong. He helped boat people fleeing Vietnam and Kurdish refugees in Iraq. I asked John's wife what it's like being married to a man who has done and is doing so much.
Interesting. It's interesting. It can be frustrating that he's gone. It can be difficult. But I think I always try to keep in mind, too, how important the work is that he's doing.
At their 11:30 service, United Methodists at Unger's Third Church had seen their numbers drop to 11 before they asked him to become their pastor, too, a year ago. Now, most Sundays, the number of Methodist worshipers is over 40, and on this day, the church was full with members from many decades celebrating its 165th birthday. Even though he'd just finished leading three services at three churches, Unger seemed far from exhausted.
Love the Lord and serve others for the glory of God. Thanks be to God. Now, you all can do better than that. Hallelujah. All right.
One reason for Pastor Unger's confidence is his conviction that he's doing God's will. Another may be his and his wife's ability to have some fun along the way. Finally, the international Buddhist community, Shinyoen, emphasizes what it calls altruistic Buddhist practice. The community has developed contemporary forms of fire and water ceremonies, such as the annual late May floating lantern ceremony in Hawaii. We visited a lantern floating in New York City's Central Park, where the focus was promoting peace. Our host was Reverend Calvi Greensvold.
Shinyoen Buddhism, or Shinyoen as we call it, is an international Buddhist community rooted in a 1100-year-old lineage of Buddhism, the Shingon esoteric stream of Buddhism. The actual meaning of the name is a place to find awakening, almost as you're coming into a garden with no borders, boundaries, or fences. The ceremony this evening, the Shinyo Lantern Floating for Peace, really is something that's been adapted and built upon from a long tradition of lantern floating ceremonies. You need the simple elements of water, which symbolizes healing, compassion, and a sort of continuity with the past, connecting into the future. And fire also symbolizes awakening. Her Holiness Shinso Ito is the current head of Shinyoen. She is dedicated to making peace throughout the world.
I'd like to convey our messages to everyone of all the faiths in the world. I want people to be awakened to their kind, caring potential, and I want them to make the most of that caring nature in their everyday life.
Just as peace is not a one moment in time, it's a continuous thing. People come throughout the day, make their own lanterns, and most importantly, they'll write their messages for peace. Whether they want to focus it on remembering someone who's helped them find peace, or they really want to just take a moment to breathe and think about what is my response to the world, to everything that's going on. What is my step forward in being part of peace? When you write something, It's very individual, it's very personal, but when you float it and you realize that these lanterns are floating, it's not just yours that's out on this big reflecting pool, but it's actually, you know, bobbing and ebbing and flowing with so many others, we realize that our wishes for peace and our paths are always connected with so many others. What makes this sort of a contemporary and innovative ceremony that's unique to Shinyoen is that there's a real focus on the future, meaning, as you float these lanterns, it is not just about remembering the ones we've lost, remembering the people who've inspired us or helped us become who we are, but it's also about seeing where we are now at this moment in time because of them, remembering that, but then thinking, what are we going to do in the future? It's just taking a moment to explore what we already have within us and what we have in this beautiful world around us to find both our individual path and our collective path to peace.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's much more on our website, including an interview with author Charles Marsh about the martyred theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer. You can also listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, scenes from the Vatican, where Pope Francis this week presided over a celebration of the Feast of Corpus Christi.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.